Hello and welcome to Trail Mix by Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dusty. If you're joining us for the first time, Trail Mix is the short format episodes of our show, while our long format episodes explore one hiking trail and one national park, one park at a time. Trail Mix allows us to dive deeper into the things we didn't get to cover in the long format episodes, including interviews, history, science, and environmental justice.
That's right. And this Trail Mix episode is all about the ongoing disaster in chief that is our president and the actions of his administration against the environment.
If you have ever listened to our show before, you know that along with discussing parks, we also dive into the world of politics, especially when it comes to LGBTQ plus rights and the environment, because believe it or not, we are gay and we live on this planet of Earth.
You know what really ticks me off is when people say they aren't political, like in dating profiles or casual conversation. Well, I don't really follow politics, as if you are immune to living on this planet or in this country where octogenarians regularly decide to take a hatchet to our rights or balloon the deficit because it's what their constituents would want. And I get it. Maybe not being political or not following politics means that you aren't glued to the never-ending maelstrom of turbulence that is 24-hour news or social media algorithms, but when someone says they don't follow politics, it's as big of a turnoff as someone saying, I made this design with AI. Gross.
Mike's dark realism aside, he's not wrong. He's right. Mike's favorite phrase. Unfortunately, everything is inherently political, especially when politicians and world leaders step in. From vaccines, marriage equality, AI, and the genocide in Gaza, to name a few, politics play a role. And to say the next statement in no way takes away from the importance of any of these issues I just listed, but the environment and environmental destruction for profit is perhaps the largest and most pressing issue facing the human race at this moment in time.
We are living in a period of unbelievable environmental uncertainty, and rather than rushing to fix or at the very least address the issue head on, as we did when COVID-19 shut down the world, we as the human race are actively exacerbating it. Even worse, some, including world leaders, are actively denying it and fanning the literal flames of anti-science and anti-environmentalism.
Which brings us to our episode today, Environmental Disaster. While you know that there is no love lost between our sitting commander-in-chief, this episode seeks to underscore the ecocide policies of the current administration when it comes to a variety of topics related to the environment, from national parks, monuments, and forests to clean air and clean water to environmental racism and endangered species. There unfortunately is a lot to tackle.
So with that being said, let's start with the old wheelhouse, the National Park Service, National Forest, and National Monuments. There have been a great deal of executive orders and policy decisions that have already worked against the National Park Service and National Forests within the first year of this second time around terror-filled regime. Let's start with the national parks. While some of these issues we discuss for one particular entity are to underscore the challenges facing them, it doesn't negate or take away from the fact that some of these issues are also impacting these separate but many times commingled entities, parks, monuments, and forests.
When it comes to the national parks, the issue is less environmentally obvious, but the ramifications of staffing cuts have hugely impacted the parks and how they maintain and care for the lands within their purview. The NPS has lost about a quarter of its workforce since the late winter 2025. With the push for deeper cuts to be made across the board while still maintaining the same level of service that has been offered in the past, this Cinderella-esque task of finishing the cooking and the cleaning and the picking of the lentils out of the ashes so that you can go to the ball with us has pushed the Park Service and its personnel to their limits.
Some parks are now operating on skeleton staff, with trained scientists and park administration stepping in to staff visitor centers and clean restrooms rather than doing the important fieldwork or administrative tasks that are integral to these cultivated but wild spaces. Loss of rangers and park law enforcement mean that trails may be less maintained, spaces may be more easily vandalized, or visitors may more easily step into harm's way or even die, like someone who drowned this past summer at Assateague Island, as there were no lifeguards on duty because of staff cuts. While staff that remain are doing their best to plug the holes and keep the ship afloat, there is only so much stress the parks and the park employees can take before the harm that is caused to these natural spaces cannot be undone.
Within the realm of the national parks fits national monuments, whose designation varies from actual human-made spaces like the Birmingham Civil Rights National Monument or the Stonewall National Monument, preserving human history, to natural spaces like Craters of the Moon National Monument and Bears Ears National Monument. It's specifically important that we mention Bears Ears in regards to national monuments, as this has been a sticking point for this administration since their first go-around, and legal opinions from the current Justice Department have imperiled it and other designated spaces, be they natural or human-made.
A great deal of this deals with a Justice Department opinion released in May of 2025 that states that presidents can reduce the size of or revoke national monuments, which completely disregards the 100-plus years of history and legal opinions that state otherwise. This was originally explored as opinion during the FDR administration, but it was found that it is unlawful for a president to do so.
The grist which this current robber baron run administration is adding to the mill for stating that it can reduce the size comes in the language of the Antiquities Act, which grants the power for presidents to create and expand national monuments. Since it was created in 1906, 18 presidents have used it to create 168 national monuments. This president is the only one who has actively sought to dismantle monuments by way of national energy emergency, of which there is none. The language of the Antiquities Act, which this administration has seized on, is that a monument, quote, shall be confined to the smallest area compatible with the proper care and management of the objects to be protected, end quote. The argument then becomes, what is the smallest area that these existing monuments can be, and can they be sized down?
Lastly, as it relates to our public lands and the habitats they protect, national forests have come into the crosshairs. In June of 2025, the Roadless Area Conservation Rule, or Roadless Rule, was rescinded, which has allowed for 59 million acres of forest land to be logged. This rollback has allowed for vital forest land to be up for grabs as part of the executive order Unleashing Prosperity Through Deregulation. While this executive order is touted as removing overcomplicated and burdensome barriers that impact American innovation, it is thinly veiled as yet another opportunity to seize natural resources which were once protected to turn a profit.
Another key factor cited is that the access of these national forests by roadways and the logging of these forests will help to prevent wildfires. Which is interesting because massive staff layoffs to the National Forest Service workforce, the very individuals in charge of wildfire prevention and responsible care months prior to this, seem as though the moves were, shock of shocks, premeditated to continue to hobble our public lands.
So what does this mean, in essence, for our public lands right now?
Well, it's messing with certain things enough so that it sends things into a stall.
Shock, yeah, or shock.
So that other things can, like, mm-hmm. other agenda items can hopefully happen,
mm-hmm.
like, according to them.
Mm-hmm.
And inside of all of that, it just puts everybody in harm's way.
Right.
And endangers ecosystems and depletes natural resources mm-hmm. and
splendor.
Yeah, well, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it also, you know, is interesting considering that there's a giant cross section of Americans, like across the political spectrum, that love the national parks and national park spaces and national lands, forest
yeah.
lands, BLM lands, fish and wildlife lands.
Yes.
Like, and this is like a direct
it's one
marching
of the
order
only
against,
bipartisan yeah. things we have.
Right.
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 Is our love for the land that is America.
Right.
But of course, like, that would do that. Like, let's pull apart the
right.
thing that brings us together.
Right. Right. You may be asking yourself, how could things possibly get worse? And the answer to that would be 3.5 more years. 3.5 more years to impact our water, airways, and our most vulnerable endangered species. Let's take a look at the policies of a president who touted in 2020 that, quote, I really believe in the environment. I want the cleanest water and the cleanest air, end quote, and how they stack up to those claims.
In July of 2025, our environmental disaster in chief signed several proclamations that have negated the work of clean air legislation, allowing blanket exemptions to over 100 facilities, allowing them to release toxic pollutants into the air in over 30 states and territories. There's no other way to cut it. This is sadistic shit. Like, how can you be so unbearably cruel level of assholery?
The order allows a variety of production and power plants to kick down the road, the use of better technology, or in some cases, the ability to fully turn off the very systems put in place to filter out pollutants. This order allows companies a workaround to the Hazardous Organic National Emission Standards for Hazardous Air Pollutants, or HON, and gives over 30 commercial sterilization facilities to be as pollutant as they want. It should be noted that surrounding communities to these types of polluters have cancer risk rates over 80 times the risk rate acceptable by the EPA.
These standards were put in place for good reason, as they ask companies that produce toxic pollutants to do the right thing, even though they shouldn't have to be told to do so, and work to protect more than 7 million citizens of the United States where all this terrible shit is happening. These chemicals that have, up until this point, been a part of these limitations are linked to cancer, asthma, and birth defects. And many of these diseases from breathing in dirty air are impacting children the most. What a grand display from the party concerned with the sanctity of life.
And if that doesn't make you feel a deep-seated anger coalescing to a rage headache in the brow, then let's look at clean water and the ways in which our waters are likely to become less pristine and clean. A lot of this comes down to hobbling of agencies in charge of such matters, like the EPA, more on this later, and cutting budgets in the name of fiscal conservancy, which again is a rich sentiment considering the $3.4 trillion added to the deficit by this very party through the passage of the Big Beautiful Bill.
The House released a plan in their appropriations bill for 2026, which would see a 23% reduction to the budget of the EPA and about a 6% reduction to the budgets of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the National Park Service. In this bill, there are numerous sections that target the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act. Along with provisions that would make polluting the air easier, there are plenty of provisions which would limit financial assistance programs for states for clean water and reduce the resources for Superfund cleanup. Superfund cleanup, you mean doing the right thing and helping to clean dangerously polluted sites so that they are no longer polluted? That's right. Good luck to you with that dangerous chemical spill and the toxic bloom underneath the surface of your town. I'm sure you will be fine.
Consequently, the financial assistance programs for states for clean water and clean drinking water is how older lead pipes within cities and municipalities were cleaned up. The process was already in place before the Biden presidency, but his administration worked to expand it and to hasten the replacement of pipes, which also helped to limit the exposure to toxic forever chemicals. The new bill from this Congress, as written, would also place a great deal of restriction or limiting action on prohibition of several forever chemicals found in drinking water, and several pesticides and fertilizers which are known to either be carcinogenic or cause a wide range of other health issues. And unfortunately, pesticides and fertilizers do have runoff that directly impacts water supplies and drinking water.
These policies or agencies put in place to aid in public health and well-being have now become the target of deregulation in order to yet again put profit over people, which I guess could probably be the credo that replaces E Pluribus Unum out of many one on the great seal of the Oval Office. And we can thank one of Project 2025's authors for a lot of this deregulation, Russell Vaught, who is the chief of the White House Budget Office. In 2023, he said the following at a pro-Trump think tank, quote, "We want their funding to be shut down so that the EPA can't do all of the rules against our energy industry because they have no bandwidth financially to do so," end quote. And separately, quote, "We want to put them in trauma," end quote. Hey, Mike, you know what I was thinking?
What?
Whether we're hiking trails in national parks or camping, it's so important for us to have a really good cup of coffee in the mornings.
Oh my God, it's the thing that gets us up and gets us going, for sure. And if you haven't tried AeroPress coffee yet, you're in for a treat. AeroPress uses a completely unique brew method, and because of that, you get a delicious cup of coffee that you can only get with AeroPress.
And it's a coffee maker that you can take with you wherever you go, and it doesn't break, and it isn't bulky.
AeroPress combines the best qualities of a few coffee brewing methods into one brewer. A little French press, a little pour over, a little espresso, because it takes the best of all three. It just might be the best cup of classic coffee you'll ever drink.
AeroPress was designed to fit your lifestyle. Unlike other brewers, you can take this exceptional coffee anywhere you go and along with any activity you do. Compact, durable, reliable, delicious.
And it's convenient too. It's the fastest single cup coffee maker out there. 2 minutes to brew and clean.
AeroPress is shockingly affordable, less than $50, and we've got an incredible offer for our listeners. Visit aeropress.com/gaze. That's AeroPress.com/gaze, GAZE. Again, that's promo code GAZE, GAZE, for 20% off your order. Hey y'all, it's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right, it's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah? With over 10 episodes across 2 separate seasons, it would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season 1 is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala. All in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio, and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails! Speaking of trauma to the environment, you know, the irreversible kind, in April of 2025, a proposal was put forth by the current administration to disregard the Endangered Species Act, which states that it is unlawful for any person to, quote, take, end quote, endangered species, and it defines take as, quote, harass, harm, pursue, wound, or kill, end quote. For 50 plus years, this law has been interpreted to mean that, quote, harm, end quote, would also relate to significant habitat loss or willful destruction of habitat. If we've been paying attention to the news lately, habitat loss is a driving force behind the much more expedient death of mammals and insects globally over the last several decades.
The proposed rescinding of this order would mean that, yet again, profit would outweigh the needs of the most vulnerable. That logging and mining and any other host of industry or business would take precedence over the most endangered species. Yet again, this current administration is looking for loopholes around these long-standing laws by finding semantic reasons in text. In the 1990s, a case was brought before the Supreme Court, Babbitt versus Sweet Home Chapter of Communities of Greater Oregon, which sought a way around the Endangered Species Act. The law was upheld by the court in a 6-3 decision, but Justice Anton Scalia's dissent in the case has now been seized upon by the administration.
The court originally applied the Chevron deference to the case, deferring to the organization to interpret ambiguous laws based on their expertise. Scalia argued that the language of the ESA, or Endangered Species Act, and specific meaning of words did not best match the meaning of the statute, specifically the words take and harm. Since the Chevron deference has since been overturned in 2024, by this current court, it seems as though the opening exists in which to undermine the law, or at least the law in its current iteration. While no further action has been taken yet, it does not mean that no further action will be taken. So, a lot of these laws, Clean Air, Clean Water, and the Endangered Species Act, were all signed into law in the late 60s and the early 70s. Two were by Richard Nixon, a Republican, and one by LBJ, which was the Clean Air Act. It's wild that 50 years from those original signings, here is where we're at. We fully have negated our responsibility to the environment, and I'm just, how did we decide that the environment no longer matters? I guess it's just capitalism.
That's why. That's the justification for it all, is capitalism at all costs.
Right.
And I know that Richard Nixon was a Republican, but the Republicanism that existed in Richard Nixon's time is gone. Like, the Republicanism that exists 10 years ago is gone. That's gone. Republicanism now looks one way and Democrat looks another way. And that, like, people keep, like, reaching back into, like, the past to go, like, but this is what it means. And it's like, no, we've lost the plot now. This is what it looks like now. And the Democrats have yet to sort of emerge as, like, the working class party, which it seems they're trying to do. But the Republican Party clearly, like, only cares about the agenda of the 1% or billionaires and taking care of them at all costs, and their investments in American companies that can produce more
wealth
and sell more,
right,
and make more wealth,
yeah,
when environmental protections aren't keeping them from doing so.
And the proof is in the pudding. This is not us opining. This is, you can look at any of the policy.
Absolutely.
And see, this is very factual.
Completely, yeah. Well, it wouldn't be a Mike resourced and written episode if there wasn't a lilt toward darkness. For our final act, let's chat about the big news related to climate change. Two items of importance have recently been decided upon. Let's start with something light and cheery. In July of 2025, the International Court of Justice, which is the UN's legal arm, ruled that governments and countries are legally responsible to protect the environment from greenhouse gas emissions, and that fossil fuel production may constitute a wrongful act on an international scale.
This is actually amazing news, because it now puts the onus on governments and sovereign nations to do their part when it comes to working to a better future. That being said, the International Court of Justice, though recognized by all 193 members of the UN, only has 73 countries that abide by its compulsory jurisdiction. This means that these nations have recognized the rulings of the ICJ, or the International Court of Justice, by declaration through their governing bodies, and accepted and follow these rulings. While less than half of the UN member nations not abiding isn't great, there are plenty of entanglements, especially when it comes to markets and investors, which can start to make waves for nations who don't fully abide by this ruling, which may directly impact economies or national interests.
All this to say, guess one of the countries that doesn't abide by the ICJ's ruling? That's right, the good old US of A. Which makes the second bit of news, the darker of the two pieces, all the more exciting. In August of 2025, Lee Zeldin, head of the EPA, proposed the rescinding of the 2009 endangerment finding, which essentially worked to regulate emissions of greenhouse gases, you know, the things that are driving the incredible shift in climate and the decimation of life as we know it on this planet Earth.
The endangerment finding has been a guiding force in working, albeit on a small scale, within the U.S. to fight climate change through regulation and reduction in emissions. The current administration argues several reasons for the rescinding of the finding, including the term air pollutant in the Clean Air Act, the law that gave the endangerment finding legs, should be more narrowly interpreted to a more local scale, because how can we regulate air pollutants from our nation that create global harm? That subsequent and later court rulings have changed the game on what the EPA can actually regulate, and that the EPA never really had the right to issue such a broad standalone finding, and that this singular finding should actually be multiple findings based on specific pollutants, which should be issued concurrently and less broadly, which would mean that these findings would need constant updating and could not rely on past findings, as they would always be in flux. Essentially, making it seem like they want more specificity for a good reason, when in actuality, it hamstrings the whole process.
Some other notable arguments include the fact that the endangerment finding never considered how greenhouse gases were essentially good for making the planet more green through explosive plant and crop growth, and that the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, has just been so pessimistic on what climate change is actually doing to our Earth. That, and the fact that these findings undermine the standards set forth in the executive order of Restoring Gold Science. Everything is about gold or gold standard with this moron. You really need some more creative titles, girl.
A lot of this pushback comes from a report drafted by the Department of Energy, which is based on the findings of five climate change denying scientists, which is a bonker statement. Climate change denying scientists is on par with vaccine denying doctors. There is data to back these things up, which is basically the crux of your careers. The report discounts the work of the National Climate Assessment, the IPCC, and the U.S. Global Change Research Program, USGCRP. So a lot of science denialism here, which is a shock of shocks and par for the course.
The response to this has been pretty swift, though who knows the level of impact it will have on an administration who basically has thrust us back into the dark ages when it comes to research and tried and true methods of discovery. The National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine, a private nonprofit institution which was formed via congressional charter under Lincoln, will work to fast-track a report using all the scientific data and evidence available to them to craft a report for lawmakers to counter-argue the rescinding of the endangerment finding. Hopefully, this report will soften the blow, but there is no guarantee of its potency in an administration that seems bent on rewarding fossil fuel companies at the expense of its citizens' health, lives, and safety.
Isn't it fun to be alive?
Someone to choke out the air. Someone to set us with strife. Someone to poison our streams, to ruin our lives, and make us aware of being alive. I completed that for you.
Thank you.
Well done on your on your writing.
Thank you. I do love a good parody.
Yes. The fight for climate justice is incredibly important, maybe even more so now in these trying times. Before ending this episode, it is important to note the impacts of environmental action on communities of color and low-income communities, as they are most impacted by environmental policies or lack thereof. In January of 2025, policies dating from the Clinton administration and initiatives and funding from the Biden administration have either been rescinded or halted. These initiatives, which relied on 30 years worth of information, which showed the disproportionate impact on these communities when it came to climate change, are now no more. While the Clinton administration certainly got the ball rolling on addressing the issue, the Biden administration took it much further than any administration in the fight to recognize, address, and make amends to these low-income communities and communities of color.
Like all things in this two-ring circus of an administration, that's right, they don't even get a third ring because they are that piss poor.
I agree. These ring for you.
These policies, while under the guise of eliminating wasteful spending or being fiscally responsible, are just attacks against those who are the most vulnerable and who have consistently been underrepresented or underserved through the long course of this nation's history.
This environmental attack on these communities and on the nation at large coalesce denialism, a lack of education, a mistrust in science and data, and a willful disregard for the lives of others. The environment, clean air, clean water, habitats for endangered species, and safety and security of citizens through corrective climate change action should be the goal of any government in any part of the world. Unfortunately, in this hellscape we currently find ourselves in, the memo has not been gotten, and instead, hubris and greed have won the day for now. But the tide will turn, because we're going to make sure it does, even if the literal tide ends up swallowing us all whole. The sources for today's episode include the article, Why a Landmark Ruling from the World's Top Court Put Financial Markets on Notice, by Sam Meredith, from CNBC.com.
The article, in Policy Reversal, Trump Eliminates Help for Black and Latino Communities, hit harder by pollution, by Michael Phyllis and Alexis St. John from AP.com.
The article, National Academies Will Review Endangerment Finding Science, by Marianne Lavelle from InsideClimateNews.com.
The article, A Legal Analysis of the Trump's EPA Plan to Revoke the Endangerment Finding, by Hannah Viscara and Marvin C. Brown IV from EarthJustice.org.
The segment from Morning Edition, Destroying Endangered Species Habitat Wouldn't Count as Harm Under Proposed Trump Rule, by Jonathan Lambert, featured on NPR.
The article, Environmental Energy and Law, Trump Administration Targets Endangered Species Act Habitat Protections, by Sarah Dewey from the Harvard Law School of Environmental Energy and Law.
The article, U.S. National Parks Staff in Survival Mode to Keep Parks Open Amid Trump Cuts, by Oliver Millman, featured on The Guardian.
The article, Long Lines and Scientists Forced to Clean Bathrooms, America's National Parks Struggle with a Significantly Reduced Workforce After Trump's Mass Firings, by Will Simmons on Adventure.com.
The article, Trump Administration Sets Stage for Attack on National Monuments, by Morgan Sogren, published on thesierraclub.org.
The article, U.S. House 2026 Budget Guts Environmental Protections, by Brian Biankowski from thenewlead.org.
The article, President Donald Trump Promises Clean Water, His Proposed Budget Guts Needed Protections, by Michael Hawthorne, published in the Chicago Tribune.
And the article, Trump Halts Clean Air Laws for Most of the Country, by Aaron Fitzgerald on earthjustice.org. Looking for more episodes like the one you just heard? Then be sure to check out our episode finder for episodes by park, state, hiking difficulty, and terrain, as well as all of our Trail Mix episodes in one helpful place. Click the link in the show notes of this episode, our Instagram bio, or visit our website to make your listening experience even easier.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created, produced, edited, and hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram and on our website is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as New Jersey.